Now back to the Eric Vaughn Show on 1290 WNCS, the talk of the town.
All right, Milwaukee, welcome back to the Eric Vaughn Show. Once again, Earl Ingram sitting in for Eric for the next 3 to 4 days. He's on vacation and she'll be returning by Tuesday. And I am always pleasured and honored to be in the company of Sheriff Clark. Sheriff Clark, how you doing, sir?
Wonderful. Thanks for asking.
And also, and you know what? The beautiful Miss Kim Brooks.
The pleasure's all mine, though. It really is. Yeah.
You know, I've often, I marvel at your candidness and your openness and the things that you say. You aren't worried about whether someone likes you or whether or not someone looks at you in a negative sense. You say what's on your mind. You speak very frankly and clearly. And sometimes that's enough to anger folks. But one of the things I wanted to talk to you today about was what's going on down at the lake. We know this is and the parks. This is a major initiative that you've undertaken for the last 3 to 4 years. And I spent a lot of time walking down by the lake. And I got to tell you, it is nice. I do recall the times when the lake was a little out of kilter. Mm-hmm. And, it wasn't as peaceful as it is now. And there are many who will say that there's some heavy-handedness going on, but I got to tell you, it feels good to be comfortable walking around down at the lake.
You know, that's good to hear. And as I always say, because self-assessments are always flattering, you know, when especially with law enforcement, when they say, you know, we're doing a good job and we're doing good work. And that is not necessarily untrue, but I go by the people's viewpoint as to how things are going on. So when I hear from you and I hear from others that they feel that the environment's changed, because that was our objective when I put this parks plan and lakefront plan into place, as you indicated 3 years ago, the objective was to create an environment where people could come down there, families could come down there, anybody could come down there, and order would be restored. You know, there's a social contract that we have with one another, as you know, and it's not written anywhere, but it's that social contract is that certain behaviors required in certain areas. I'll give you an example. Church. There's a certain way, you know, to conduct yourself in church. Other public spaces. There's just a certain way, you know, if you bump into somebody, you say, excuse me.
Right.
It's not required by law, but it's part of the social contract. But somebody needs to enforce that social contract. The police didn't create it. Society did and says this is what, you know, the sort of behavior we're going to require each other, you know, to maintain in this environment. So when I hear those sorts of things, it lets me know that we are succeeding. And it's part of our parks plan as well. The parks plan doesn't get as much publicity. And sometimes what we get is, oh, you know, you're focusing all that on the lakefront and what about our parks? But this has been a part of the parks plan as well, you know, the lakefront, you know, Washington Park, McGovern Park, King Park, just to name a few, where the same thing was going on. It was starting to become a hangout for people, and then their rules applied. And people, what happens then is eventually the law-abiding people say, hey, I'm not going there anymore. And that's what was happening down at the lake. Then what you have is, you know, a population of individuals who, you know, they're obnoxious at times. They're obscene. Disorder prevails, and nobody wants to be in that sort of environment. So, and I'm glad to hear that you notice it, and I'll pass that on.
Well, I got to tell you, especially McGovern Park. I run a youth football program, and we use McGovern Park as one of the sites where we play football games. And from August 16th through November 1st, the presence of your deputies in the park really helps us immensely. We have thousands of people who come to our games, and just the presence of having those deputies there makes a world of difference to our program over at McGovern.
And, you know, the other thing, too, is, you know, all the resources that I have, and I have to cover the entire county, but, you know, our community, our folks, we deserve some public safety, too. We deserve some of these public safety dollars. That's my attitude, you know, which is why I spread it around. We deserve it. We want it. And, you know, you mentioned that some people complain about the heavy-handedness of law enforcement. And that is a concern. That is an issue. And when given that choice with some individuals. You know, do we want rude, obnoxious, heavy-handed police, or do we not want them at all? They're going to choose, well, we don't need them here, and I don't blame them. You know, the things that we do have to be accepted by the community, our tactics, our initiatives, the way we conduct business. And if it's not, I don't blame people when they say, well, in the heck with it, we don't even want to see them here. And that's a balancing act for me. And everybody in my organization knows that I don't tolerate any of that nonsense. And when I say I don't tolerate it, I've demonstrated that I will take appropriate action, including discipline. I don't want people mistreated. I don't want rudeness from officers. I will not stand for, not only tolerate, I will not stand for excessive force. And again, that's because I represent the people's interests, and the people have made it clear to me we're not going to put up with these kind of police tactics. So it's, you know, it's always, you're always going to find somebody, because I'm not here to say that there's nobody in my organization, a deputy that's never been rude to somebody or officious. Right. And that will happen. You know, you have 600 individuals. I have about 600 sworn deputies. Every once in a while, somebody is going to go outside our code of conduct and act independently, right, contrary to what we really stand for. But when I find out about it, people can rest assured that I'm going to put an end to it, and that person's going to be dealt with in a not-too-pleasant manner.
You know, that brings me to this point. I recall, again, having been in the city my entire life, when you took over, before you took over, there were some issues where some deputies had been involved in some unsavory things. And one of the things that you said you were going to do when you took over was exactly what you just got through saying, and that was to make deputies accountable. To that end, are you more concerned about whether or not deputies respect you or whether or not deputies themselves like you? I mean, does that, when you're leading as a leader, are you more concerned about what, or respect you or hate you or what? I mean, what is it? That's got to be a thin line, you know, because you know there's a little bit of both.
Yeah, and you know, it doesn't matter to me. That doesn't enter into the equation of leadership. And you know, where I first learned my leadership lessons from was former Secretary of State, four-star General Colin Powell. Actually wrote
That's a great
book
leader.
With an author, last name Harari, on the leadership secrets of Colin Powell. And Powell talks about how, you know, leadership, it's prepared to be lonely, he says. He also says it's not a popularity contest. Don't worry about those things. And he also says that if you're going to make a difference, sometimes you're going to, it's going to be upsetting to people. So you're going to get the, you know, the things that you talk about. But he says, don't worry about that. He says, the main thing is, and what leadership really is not, some people say, well, the ability to obtain followers. I don't want people following me. I'm trying to develop other leaders. What I want to do is I want to create and manage change. That's what leaders really do. And you talked about it. When I came in, I said, things are going to be different here. And I enumerated
There's them. No doubt there's
going to be accountability and, right, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that was a big change, a culture change for this organization. And so it's the ability to create and manage change. I'm more concerned about that. And I also remind myself continually, I'm an elected official. The people put me here. I represent the people's interests in this organization. I do not represent the employees of this organization. They have a collective bargaining agent and outfit that does that. I represent the people's interests. I'm here to protect the people's interests in this organization and make sure that what we do is in the best interest of people first and in the best interest of organization. It's not that I don't care about the employees, but they come third.
And so then you just answered the question I was about to ask you. What would you say to those employees who say, well, we're not happy with the way we're treated, so therefore we can't perform? They're not one and the same is what you're telling me.
They're not one and the same. And what my answer is, and I remind people of this constantly, because it's not, you know, when you're in a position of leadership, it's not that you can just give out orders and directives and think if you say it one time and order people to do it that it's always going to be adhered to. But I remind people continually that you're in public service. We're public servants. I'm a public servant. I may be an elected official, but I'm a public servant first. So we're here to serve and meet the needs of the public, not our own. And when I hear that sort of thing out of people, and I do hear it a lot, what I really hear in between the lines is self-serving. I hear self-pity. because nobody in my organization, Earl, is being held here against their will. And if it's so terrible, and if it's so unbearable, I think life's too short to stick around. So I don't tell them quit. I just say you need to make a decision. But you need to remember that if you're going to stay, remember why you came into this. And anybody that gets into public service will tell you, when they first got in, I want to help people. I want to serve. And I say, well, then go do it.
You know, you talked about 600 deputies. And I got to believe that that's a pretty low number compared to what it had been 15, 20 years ago. Have you done a lot of hiring at all, or replacing deputies, or is there any through attrition? I know you've been really good at keeping the budget in line and even returning some dollars. How have you been able to accomplish that and then move deputies into areas that they had never been involved in before?
The first thing I did was I wanted to identify and eliminate all waste, fraud, and abuse in this organization. And Earl, you know, you talked about it before, how very frank, and
right.
There was a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse in this organization. And I wanted to identify it and cut it out. This organization traditionally ran multi-million-dollar deficits. And I made it very clear to the people inside this organization, and I made it clear to the county board we weren't going to do that. Now, there are sometimes things that go on during the course of a budget year that you didn't plan for, that you could not foresee, and sometimes the budget will get out of whack. People understand that. But when you're talking about waste, fraud, and abuse, they don't understand that. So what became important was for us to create more value for that public safety dollar. In other words, if we spend a dollar on public safety, I want a dollar's worth of value. I don't want 60 cents. I don't want 75. I don't want 90 cents. That's not good enough. $1 for public safety, the value better be a dollar. So we started to, I sat down with my budget manager, and we put together a plan to be able to stay within the budget. And I'm proud to say 6 consecutive budgets have been balanced. That hasn't happened in, you know, I think when I looked, 1986 was the last time they came in with a balanced budget in a sheriff's office. It's just not right to do with other people's money, and that's what we're spending. I'm spending your money. I'm spending my money. I'm spending your listeners' money. I wouldn't do that with my own money. Why should I do it with yours? So we put together a plan, and we eliminated the waste, fraud, and abuse. Next thing you know, not only did we balance it, we got money at the end of the year. And that's what will happen when you watch what you're doing with other people's money. That's caused some of the consternation, you know, internally with some of the critics and some of the people who aren't happy. But they were acting like this money was theirs. It's not theirs. It belongs to the people.
So would you say, again, that you are more concerned with whether they respect you or fear you?
Doesn't matter.
Your job is to lead, and that's what you're going to do.
If somebody wants to tell me, you know, internally, well, I don't respect the sheriff, that's okay. But you better respect the people you serve, and they put me here. But you better go out and do what they need to be done, and I don't worry about what people feel about me.
And a leader can't do that.
You can't. And I say this too: when I want to be loved, Earl, and when I want to be pampered and cared about, I go home to my wife. I do care about how my family feels about me.
Right.
But we're not talking about leadership when you're talking about your family. You know, my friends, my wife. What?
Right.
Yeah, I'm concerned about whether they love me or respect me and like me. You know, that's important. But not when I go into this public safety environment, or this, I should say, public service environment, because I'm here to serve the people. And if I'm worried about how they feel about me, again, that's self-serving. Then I'm worried about me, and this doesn't have anything to do with me.
Sheriff Clark, let's talk about the presence in the community. I have seen, and again, having been in the city all my life, I don't ever recall too often having sheriffs on the city streets pulling over people and stopping them and kind of broadening what I guess the role of county sheriffs are here in the city. Have you had any contact with the new police chief and any communication at all about maybe how you guys can collaborate on working with these issues that impact and affect our community?
I've had several sit-down, face-to-face conversations with Chief Edward Flynn. I like Ed Flynn. Ed Flynn comes from the same policing philosophical school that I do. And it starts with a strong presence, visible presence, where people can see, you know, things going on, change taking place, communities getting safer. And there's no doubt in my mind that if given time and the right resources, and I'm not so sure he has all the resources yet. I don't think he does, but that's just my opinion.
Right.
But if given time and the political support, because that's where the resources have to come from, I think he's going to turn this around in terms of making this a safer city. We do collaborate on some things. I wish there were more collaboration, because there are some things that if both organizations put some of their resources, and he has limited resources, so do I.
Right.
You know, I have 600 sworn deputies. He's got about 1,800. So he's got three times the
amount of manpower.
Amount of human manpower. So, you know, I thought at the time, when you talk about an expanded role, and I really didn't expand the role. I mean, it seemed like that, but the sheriff has a mandate to keep the peace within the county. And it says, regardless of whether or not those areas of the county have a municipal police force, I still have to play it.
Right.
The mandate says so. It doesn't say, sheriff, if you want to do it, go ahead. And if you feel like doing it, and if people are happy about you, it says the sheriff shall keep the peace.
So it's not about overstepping boundaries.
Not at all. Some people see it that way. You know, there have been some chiefs in this county that see it as an imposition and turf,
right,
invading turf. And I don't see it that way. I say I got a few resources, and I'm willing to give the people, because this is the people's money.
Right.
And they want safer communities. They want safer neighborhoods. This is their money. I got a few that I can give back. At the time, you know, because we're going back 6 years when we're talking about sheriff's deputies inside some of these neighborhoods and municipalities, especially the city of Milwaukee, we were under siege with crime. Nobody would deny that.
Right.
And there wasn't a whole lot going on in terms of a real plan to get these neighborhoods under control. I didn't see it. I was asking. I said, where's the written plan to accomplish it? You aren't going to accomplish anything in life without a plan to get there. And the U.S. attorney and the district attorney at the time approached, actually it was John Chisholm, who wasn't the DA, but he was the head of the gun unit, in a gun prosecution, the DA's office, approached me and said, you know, would you help us from the street-level enforcement angle of dealing with gun crime? And they wanted to put together a task force of officers to deal specifically and wanted a focused effort on gun crime. I said, I have a few resources. And at the time, I said, I got about 16, 17 people I can add to that task force. They wanted 40 between Milwaukee Police and my organization. I said, I don't have 40. I said, I don't have 20, but I have 16. And I lent them. I said, here's my effort. At the time, city police department wasn't real interested in teaming up with us. And so I said, well, then we'll go. Why don't we just go with the 16? I knew that wasn't enough, but at least it was an attempt.
Right.
It was an attempt to send a new message to the criminal element that, you know, their reign of terror was over.
We're going to talk a little bit about that when we come back from the break. We've got to go to the break. Our traffic update is being brought to you by the Milwaukee Brewer. I had to pull these things off. Oh, okay. The Milwaukee Brewers. Come and enjoy the Negro League game Saturday, July 5th. It's fun, educational, and history for the entire family. And the UNCF Walk Run is coming Saturday, July 19th. Stop by our studios of 1290 WMCS to register for Team 1290 at 4222 West Capitol Drive. We're open Monday through Friday from 8 to 5. Or log on to 1290WMCS.com for more info. You're listening to 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
Hi, this is Phil Anderson, your host of the Saturday Blues Brunch.
Now back to the Eric Vaughn Show on 1290 WNCS, the talk of the town.
All right, welcome back to the Eric Vaughn Show. Our phone lines open at 799-1290. Sheriff Clark is only here for a short time, so if you have a couple questions or comments, make them brief. You're listening to 1290 WNCS, the talk of the town. Sheriff Clark, I got to tell you, you know, you're such a colorful individual. Well, you are, man, you know, and I see you everywhere. I mean, I don't care if it's the parade, and I see you on the horseback, and, you know, I hear people always say, man, he sure does look good in that cowboy uniform. And you'll hear women kind of talking like that, and man, he really looks good. He really looks good in his sheriff's uniform. Man, you're still in excellent shape. What do, man? You don't eat?
I don't eat as well as I should, but I think it's
Is that just hereditary?
Yeah. You know, I've always, all throughout my life, have, you know, tried to keep some sort of physical activity a part of who I am.
Right.
And so I think if you do it, if you've done it, you know, your whole life, it keeps some of those physical things from, you know, put on weight.
Right.
And I do in the winter. I put on a few pounds. There's no doubt about that. But, Earl, now I just walk. I walk.
Right.
I walk every day. I walk twice a day, probably a total of 2 to 2.5 hours, but I'm moving.
Wow.
You mean on the job?
After.
In my private life.
Oh, really?
I used to run. I used to be heavy into weight training. I got tired of running. And then, you know, running takes its toll on you.
Right.
So I just started walking, and I've been able to, you know, keep a decent weight and whatnot. And I just tell people, if you just move around, I'm sure stress,
right,
stress of my job has something to do with it. It'll keep you from putting
on. You just don't seem to be like a guy who's really let stress bother him at all, man.
Well, it affects everybody. It's how you react to it.
Right.
And so you have to have some stress releases, which is why I walk, participate in some physical activity.
Right.
A lot of that is about dealing with the stress. So if you don't do anything to create stress releases, it builds up, and that's when it starts taking a huge physical toll. But there's no doubt that the stress, because I take what I do seriously. It's what I do is important. Who I am is not. But I pour my heart and soul into what I'm doing, the responsibility that the people of this county, and I'm thankful for the voters who have put me here. But I pour my heart and soul into what I'm doing. I have a lot of passion and enthusiasm for it. That creates the stress as well.
But you also have a lot of passion and enthusiasm about our plight and what's going on with people in general in this city and some social issues. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. But we've got a caller on the line, Tim, who's been waiting for a long time to talk to you. And I want to talk a little bit about firecrackers in the park, too.
Okay.
Go ahead, Tim. You're listening to 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town. You have a question or comment for Sheriff Clark?
Hey, girl, I appreciate that a whole lot. I was wondering two quick questions for Sheriff Clark. And one of them, too, them firecrackers, I don't know why they allow them to sell them. It's illegal to use them, but, you know, you go out to these tents, and Sheriff Clark knows about those tents just out here by 7 Mile Road, you know, why they're allowed to sell them and fine you for when you use them. But that's not what I want to ask. I want to ask him this. His public relations strategy, I was wondering, when he comes up to protect the community, is it a good strategy with those armored trucks and SWAT teams at these black festivals versus, like, at a Polish festival, Italian festival? If he's getting any repercussions, if he had a SWAT team at a Polish or Italian festival. And the second question that I wanted to ask him was, I was getting some gas, and a guy from Alabama had his rifle in his back window, and he was on his way back to Alabama. He said he travels like that all the time, regardless of that Supreme Court ruling. And I was wondering, what would Sheriff Clark do if they stopped a guy like that with a rifle stuck in the back window and he was from Alabama? Those two things I wanted the sheriff to ask for me. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks for the question.
All right, Tim, thank you.
You know, you mentioned about the fireworks, and you're right. I think it creates an extreme conflict when the state allows the sale of them and then certain municipalities have banned them. When you can step outside the city of Milwaukee, and actually you have to go outside Milwaukee County, but you don't have to go too far away.
No, West Atlas, you can actually.
And I heard an ad on one of the local radio stations the other day talking about the largest fireworks sale we have the largest tent, the most, right. you know, whatever. And I'm listening to this, and they're playing on a Milwaukee radio station. That's what makes it tough for law enforcement, and it makes it tough on communities that really don't want to put up with that nonsense. But they're able to be bought within the states, not like they have to go down south,
right.
you know, and pick them up and bring them back. So that's the dilemma. On the
What is the response to the sheriffs in the park if they see people? I know that right now the Common Council was talking about really heavy fines and cracking down on anybody using those fireworks. What is the county's position, the sheriff's position, with fireworks in the park?
Well, it is contraband. We will confiscate it. And if it's if we get a call or we observe and come upon something where somebody's using them recklessly, and we've seen where people are, you know, they'll light them and throw them at somebody to get right. them to jump and dance, and they think that's funny, but that's dangerous. We will charge them criminally, recklessly endangering safety. And the reason is, you know, we can't wait until somebody loses an eye, gets a finger blown off, not of their own doing. If you're fooling around with that stuff and you blow off a finger, I don't say too bad, but there's not too much I can do for you. But when you start using those things in a densely populated area, a park, a neighborhood, a gangway, a backyard, and there are a lot of people around, that's when law enforcement has to be a little more strict on what we do. So, yes, we will charge you criminally, but for the most part, we'll just confiscate them. We don't have a county ordinance, you know, banning the possession of right. But that's why we use the criminal statute of recklessly endangering safety. And we do get calls on that in the park. We're coming up on the 4th of July. I know we'll get them here as well, you know, this year as well. I still maintain that the dilemma is it's not against the law to sell them within the state of Wisconsin. So, you know, we're really spitting into the wind. I mean,
but that's always going to be there. I don't think anybody's going to address that or change that.
You're right, because in your rural areas, it's very popular,
right.
and most of the state is rural.
Right.
On the caller's question about the excessive presence, you know, these SWAT teams and, you know, this sometimes I call it excessive presence of law enforcement. You know, some of that is dictated by what you're dealing with. When you're dealing with, you know, he mentioned Polish Fest. You know, there's just not a whole lot of people that go down to that. So you don't need 150 police officers. And I'm not saying that nobody goes, but,
right.
you know, for the most part. And you base it on your experience in terms of what kind of complaints do they get, what kind of trouble have they had in prior years. When you look at crowds in public spaces, you know, like the Bradley Center, let's say Miller Park, you get 40,000 people. Let's say Juneteenth, which is a very well-attended festival. The people who go to Juneteenth deserve to be protected. So, you know, and I know a lot of times it's interpreted that, well, I got the police down here to intimidate, and it does appear to be that way. But if I'm down there, you're down there with your family, your friends, you want to feel safe. And sometimes, based on some of the things that have gone on, unfortunately, you have to do that. When I heard that this year the Milwaukee police, I think I heard the number was 250 people, I said, wow. You know, and I don't want to get into
in the presence of about a 5-block radius.
Yeah, and I don't want to, you know, get into because I wasn't part of that plan.
Right,
and that was a decision that, you know, Ed Flynn had to make, and so I don't want to criticize that decision. I thought, and I'm not saying it was too much, but that's why I said, wow.
Don't you think it was responding to what happened at River Splash?
River Splash, and what's gone on the last couple of years
right.
at. Juneteenth Day. I mean,
he couldn't have probably looked at that as preventative, and maybe it could have been overkill.
Here's the alternative, Earl. If he sends 25 down there, and some idiot comes down and, you know, with a gun and just fires shots into the air or whatever, and now you got mass pandemonium because you have a lot of people.
Oh, no doubt.
You know what he's going to get? You don't care about us. That's why you didn't. You send this to this, but you don't care about us, and that's why. So it's kind of like pick your poison. Do you have 250 or do you have 25?
Right.
And no matter what you do, there's always going to be people that you know, say, well, it was too much, it was too little.
That's
you
a leadership, that. Leadership decision.
There you go.
Right.
There you go. You got to live with your decisions. And just know, this is what I do anyway. I do what I feel in my heart's the right thing to do. Doesn't mean everybody else is wrong, but I was elected to make these decisions. And the people get a say on that every 4 years, unlike with an appointed person, you know, like a chief and some of these other appointed bureaucrats, we don't get to oust them. So I'm a little more, I think I have my antenna up a little more in terms of, you know, what are people willing to tolerate from us? What are they accepting of? And what's their response afterwards?
And then the last thing, he talked about the weapon in the back of the car, yeah, and I guess the position.
The big ownership, yeah. gun ownership thing. There was a time, and I've been in law enforcement for 30 years, and all of it's been in the Milwaukee area, 24 with the City of Milwaukee Police Department. There was a time in this community, and it was back in the 80s. I started in 1978, early 80s, mid 80s, where when you call the police, they'd get there quickly. And it was a safer community back in the 80s. Sure, we had the beginning of the crack cocaine, and you started to see some of the violence, but you didn't have the homicide numbers that you have today, the shootings, the armed robbery, so on and so forth. There was a time when the police could handle this. Get a call, they'd respond, and take care of business. That's no longer the case. I hear, the biggest complaint I hear from people in this community is, oftentimes, busy nights, late at night, you call the police and it takes forever for them to get there. Unimportant stuff, sound of shots. And I just maintain that when government can no longer guarantee the personal safety of citizens, you know, with its police force and so on and so forth, I believe that they have a duty. Government has a duty to allow people the means with which to protect themselves. So when he asked about the truck with the rifle, well, we'd still do an investigation. We're not just going to say, you have the right to protect yourself. First of all, if it's visible,
you have no choice, right?
Right. If it's a long gun, it's got to be registered. Short guns and handguns in the state of Wisconsin do not have to be registered. There's a misunderstanding. A lot of people think all guns have to be registered, just long guns in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Okay, we're long, man. We got to get to a break, and we'll let you finish on the other side.
Okay.
You're listening to 1290 WMCS, the Talk of the Town.
Now back to the Eric Vaughn Show on 1290 WMCS. The Talk of the Town.
All right. The Eric Vaughn Show is brought to you by Lexus, North Shore, 1433 West Silver Spring, home of Milwaukee's finest new and pre-owned Lexus cars. Lexus North Shore, they pursue perfection so you can pursue living. All right. We are going to go directly to the phone line. We only got Sheriff Clark for a few more minutes. Dorothy, thank you very much for waiting. You're listening to 1290 WMCS, the Talk of the Town, and Sheriff Clark.
Yes. Hello, guys.
How you doing, Dorothy?
I want to say to Sheriff Clark, I only met him once. But really, I just want to say from my heart, I've heard negative things about the Sheriff's Department and the Police Department, but from my heart, I just want you to let you know I really appreciate what you're doing. You're doing a good job, and God bless you, and I'm glad to have you here.
Dorothy, I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day.
You're welcome. And if I can go back quickly to something you asked Eric, and some people might say, you know, he didn't want to answer the question about fear or respect. And I said it doesn't matter to me. To some people, it does. I'll give you an example of that. The greatest leader this earth has ever witnessed. It's our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And if you go to Proverbs 9, verse 10, it might be reversed, it might be 10, verse 9. And it talks about, I think it says something to the effect, now this isn't verbatim, to fear the Lord is the first step of wisdom. Okay, so now there's a leader, and I do fear God, but I respect him. So it's both. And I'm not saying it doesn't make any difference to him, but you can do both. So, yeah, there are people who say, well, you know, he's not a leader because people fear him. Well, Jesus Christ was a leader, and people... And he insists. I mean, you're supposed to, you know, fear God. So it can be one and the same sometimes. And I maintain this. Fear, respect, they're not that far off anymore.
Yeah. And, you know, that same thing should be used when raising children.
Right.
And that's kind of one of the things. I know that I always feared my father.
Oh, Tell me about it.
And I kind of think now that's probably one of the things that goes on in our community that's kind of gone. There's no fear there. And we don't want to get into that. Anyway, Grand, you're next up. You're listening to 1290 WMCS, the Talk of the Town.
Hey, everybody. I love the show. Hey, Sheriff Clark.
I've met you
on numerous occasions, and I just wanted to call in. I'm kind of like the lady that just called. I want to commend you. Your presence is felt. I feel safer, and I just want to say that I'm going to continue to keep you in my prayers, and that you're doing a phenomenal job, and keep up the good work. I don't have no problem seeing you out there. Like I said, I feel a lot safer.
I appreciate that.
And I love what you said about serving. You're not on this job to be winning no popularity contest.
Nope.
You go home, and you're pampered by your family, and you're not looking for that with the job. And I love that when I heard you saying that. And I just want you to be encouraged and know that I'm going to continue to keep you and your family in prayer and continue doing the job that you're doing. And, you know, at Juneteenth, I have to say this. I felt very good.
So did I.
I felt safe. Great. I didn't see no boa snakes. I didn't see no pit bulls.
Oh, there was one. I saw one young lady who had a snake around her neck.
Okay, well, I didn't
Only
see
one.
It when I was there. I was like, thank you, Jesus. Go to the zoo. Okay? But just continue doing what you're doing, and you got my support, and love you.
Thanks. I appreciate that, and likewise, I pray for you as well, and I do need prayers.
Well, you know, Sheriff, it's got to be, you know, great, even though I don't care who it is. It's always good to hear somebody say job well done sometimes, you know, and I don't care what line of business you're in or what it is you do. Sometimes people don't say enough of that, but it's pretty obvious that you've got many people who admire you and care for you. You hear a lot about detractors,
yeah.
But not you don't often get a chance to hear people call in and say they appreciate the job you do.
And that's important from the people I serve.
That's what you said early on.
Internally, I really don't care whether they like me or whether they like what I'm doing and so on and so forth.
What about
but
what's going
public,
on?
It's important.
What about what's going on at the House of Correction with the guards, the new guards that they're bringing in, and I know that those jobs used to be held by deputies, and now, you know, they're prison guards. I mean, guards that are now taking the place of what deputies used to do.
That's in our facility. The House Correction has always had corrections officer. In the jail, we're doing a transition from sheriff's deputies over to corrections officers. And a lot
What's
of it,
the difference?
Pay. I mean, they get the same training. It's efficiency. That's really what it's all about. If the House of Correction and every prison in the state of Wisconsin operates with corrections officers, they don't have arrest powers. That's really the difference. They don't have the power of arrest.
They don't carry a weapon either.
They don't carry a weapon. Okay. But they receive the same training, and they come at a more efficient cost, and you have to consider that. So if our prisons can run with corrections officers, the House of Correction runs with corrections officers, I thought, why should we have, you know, a higher price category of people? And you know what? They don't get to bring their guns, the deputies, into the jail anyway, so they're outfitted just like, you know, a corrections officer. So that had a lot to do with it. And I have to find efficiencies. It's part of my responsibility. This thing is it's getting too expensive. And we're having to demand more and more people. We're asking them to have to reach into their pocket, deeper into their pocket to be kept safer. And they're willing to do it. But, again, they expect me to find efficiencies, and they do not want waste, fraud, and abuse.
And that goes into what we've been talking about all this time with leadership, because obviously unions aren't accepting that. They're not excited that these positions are being replaced by someone who's not a deputy.
Yeah, and that's a constant, and it's with any labor organization, whether public sector or private sector. That's a threat, you know, and they see, losing positions. But really the people haven't lost positions, because when a deputy retires, we replace for the jail, replace them with a corrections officer. So the people aren't losing a position. The people are still getting somebody to perform that work. It's coming less expensive, and that's important to the people. I don't think the people really care. You know, I know the labor organizations do, but the people paying the bills, they don't care if it's a corrections officer, that's the title, or deputy sheriff.
So now you've been a sheriff for how many years?
6 years.
6 years. And you obviously your footprint is now on the Milwaukee County Sheriff Department, and if you had to, as you look at the process that you've gone over the last 6 years, you're a young enough man that you enjoy what you're doing enough that you still see that you're a lot of work, a lot more work to be done.
It's a challenge every day. And I like that saying, what have you done for me lately? What we did yesterday, what we did last week, last month, last year, 4 years ago, might have been fine, but it doesn't mean it's going to be good enough for tomorrow. So I challenge myself every day to move this organization in a better position to be able to better serve people. And I always say there's no finish line to this, so I remind the people inside, don't think we're ever going to get there. We're going to always get better, and we always will.
All right, Sheriff, I want to thank you very much for coming in. I really wish we had you a little longer, but I know you got some other things to do. It's always a pleasure having you come in and spend some time talking with us. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to get you in again soon.
Always. And let me pay you a compliment as well. And I don't have to do this, but it's sincere and it comes from the bottom of my heart. You and I, you know, philosophically on a number of issues, we just disagree. But the thing I admire about you, you have your positions. I may disagree, but you can articulate your position as to why. And that's important. It's not enough to just for someone to just have a position, you know, I agree with this or I don't agree. And I always say, well, why? I think you do an outstanding job of that, because on most of these issues, there is no right or wrong. It's just two different schools of thought.
Yes, sir.
And that's what's important to me. And I like the back and forth anyway. Right. If everybody's thinking the same thing, is anybody really thinking?
Right.
So I appreciate that about you, Earl.
All right. And Kim, thank you very much. How's the baby doing?
Doing well. Thank you for asking.
All right.
Kim Brooks, my public information.
It's good to have you guys in. I hope you have a safe fourth. And
you too.
We'll see you on the other side. You're listening to 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
Log on to 1290WMCS.com.